Now let's take a subway stop over to Wall Street, just a few subway stops right from where we are. For the last 20 years or so, scientists with strong quantitative skills, physicists, mathematicians, and engineers, have been carving out a niche for themselves in Wall Street finance jobs, using their mathematical models and number-crunching skills to predict how the stock market will behave. The first scientists to leave the lab for the boardroom had to find their own way in the world of finance. Today, a number of universities offer programs that teach mathematical finance to scientists and other quant types. They're called quite quantitative types. And there are signs that this migration to Wall Street is as strong as ever. Faced with limited opportunities in their own field, scientists are looking for jobs elsewhere. A recent survey of new physics PhDs, for example, done by the American Institute of Physics, found that half of all the new graduates went on to permanent jobs, and half of those jobs were outside the field of physics, and 11% of those went to work in business or finance. So for the rest of this hour, we'll be talking with scientists and about them who have followed this career path to Wall Street. If you thought about going to Wall Street yourself, we have a couple of scientists here who work on the street, as they say here in New York, and you can talk to them. We'll talk about what the life of a scientist on Wall Street is. Our number, 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. And as always, you can just surf over to our webpage at sciencefriday.com, where you'll find links to our topics. Now let me introduce my guests. Neil Criss is a portfolio manager and researcher at Goldman Sachs Asset Management Quantitative Research Group, there's the quant, and the director of the Mathematics and Finance Program at the Current Institute of Mathematical Science at New York University here in New York. He joins me here in our studio at WNYC. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Iraj Khani is a president of the Martingale Technologies in New York and a fellow in the Mathematics and Finance Program at Courant Institute of Mathematical Sciences at NYU. And he's also here with us at our studios. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Tell me, when you gentlemen decided that you're going to go to Wall Street, was this a hard decision to make for both of you, that this is where the job was? Iraj?
Yes, it was very hard. I had some friends from school, which came to Wall Street a year or two before I, and you know, they told me that Wall Street is exciting and that they need people like me with quantitative skills, and I was scared, but I wanted a job, and I thought about living in New York. I thought it was exciting. I wanted to do something which put me in contact with more people, and altogether, you know, I decided to come.
You had to be also, Criss, same thing with you, a little, this is not what I went to school for, Neil?
That's right. There's a lot of ambivalence about leaving academia. Academia is a certain type of life, and Wall Street's a very different type of life, and you're choosing between two completely different things. And when you're in academia, you really don't know any other life, and you don't know what it's going to be like to leave. And there's a general feeling that it's a one-way ticket out of academia, so you have to make the decision.
Certainly the salary and the food must be better, if nothing else on Wall Street, right?
The food is better, but it costs more.
Do people look at you as sort of fish out of water? Well, what are physicists doing here when they get to know you, or do you just fit right in?
People are getting used to us.
Yeah, they're getting used to it.
Yeah, they're getting used to it, and I think there was, you know, when I joined, a sort of a cultural difference, but these gaps, you know, are closing as more and more physicists and mathematicians are coming to Wall Street.
And what does Wall Street want with your skills? What do you do? What special skills do you bring to them that they can use?
Well, a mathematician or a physicist on Wall Street has a particular set of skills. They're extremely quantitative. They know how to work with technology. They know how to write computer programs, and they know how to model things. And what people on Wall Street are interested in is modeling. They want to model the markets. They want to model the pricing of securities. And they want to be able to be innovative so that they can get a competitive advantage. And people with the kinds of background that Raj and I have the ability to help business people realize their visions of the types of instruments they want to trade, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Well, the financial markets have been around for a long time. What's different now that makes people with your skills more valuable?
Well, one thing is the products and sort of markets are getting much more complicated these days. I think the sort of a skill that you needed 20 years ago is very different from the sort of skill you need now. There are complicated products, and the analysis under new markets, especially derivative markets, which I'm sure we've all heard about, have introduced a great deal of complexity in. I think this is definitely one reason.
And additionally, people are putting more and more money in the stock market these days, and they're looking for asset management. And people have been following things like the Dow Jones and the S&P 500, and a lot of people are realizing that if they just put their money in a index fund, which tracks one of these indexes, they can do quite well. And some of the asset managers who are beating the Dow or beating the S&P 500 are using quantitative methods.
Mm-hmm. And you would think that that since this, the Wall Street depends on so many numbers and so many calculations, that they would have discovered this years ago. I mean, isn't there history here that maybe some of Einstein's old theories were used years ago? Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, a lot of today's derivative or asset pricing models or derivative pricing models, option theory essentially, a lot of it is based on Brownian motion, which is interestingly something that Einstein worked on. He studied it from a physical perspective, of course.
Right.
He was the one who, in many ways, defined the physical and mathematical properties of it. Of course, it was studied before by mathematicians like Wiener and, you know, Bachelier had already worked on implications of the sort of a Brownian motion in pricing options even back in 1900s. But so it's true that some of this goes back to a long time ago, mm-hmm. Work that physicists and mathematicians had done.
The migration of scientists to finance jobs began after something called the Black-Scholes model. Neil, tell us what that was, how important that was.
In the early 1970s, Black, Fisher Black and Myron Scholes discovered a formula for the value of an option. At the same time, options began to be traded on the Chicago Board of Options Exchange. And as a consequence of those two events happening very close to one another, people realized that you could use higher mathematics as a way to get at the value of securities. And the Black-Scholes formula became incredibly important in the trading of options. People essentially couldn't do without that formula.
Right.
And that, you could say, is a precursor to all that followed.
Mm-hmm. And has it been built upon or has it been expanded?
Oh, quite a bit,
yeah.
Quite a bit.
And you guys help work in that field?
Yes.
To a small degree.
Yeah. It's hard to Black-Scholes is extremely fundamental. I mean, it's sort of hard to create a sort of a.
What does it do? What does it actually?
Well,
do?
It actually allows everyone to agree on pricing of options, or what more generally people call contingent claims, which is mm-hmm. claims that depend on another asset.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't before the insight of Black and Scholes. This wasn't possible because you had to predict what the rate of return of the underlying asset was, and then you had to predict how to discount the payoffs of the option to the mm-hmm. present to be able to price it, and nobody could agree on these figures. Whereas what these two gentlemen ultimately proved and revolutionized option pricing is that, in fact, it doesn't matter. It's all you need is a set of parameters that everybody can observe, such as treasury interest rates and volatilities and dividends and things like that everyone can more or less agree on, and it's plug it into a formula and you have the answer.
Huh.
That's right. An option, for example, is a security that that pays you money if the value of a stock is, say, greater than a certain price, and pays you nothing if it's less than that certain price. And on the face of it, you would think that the value of that security depends very much on where you think the stock's going. Therefore, if Iraj and I have a completely different opinion about the direction, say, of IBM, then you would think we wouldn't be able to agree on the price of an option. But what Black and Scholes said was, no, that doesn't matter at all. In fact, you and Iraj and I can agree 100% on the value of the option, even if we have completely different views on what's happening with the stock.
Mm-hmm. Now, you both, I mentioned that you're both associated with the Courant Institute of Mathematics at NYU here, and you teach a master's program in mathematics and finance. Is this
That's correct.
So these are for scientists who want to get involved in Wall Street?
I wouldn't necessarily say scientists. We have some people with PhDs who come to our program.
Right.
But the main focus, I would say, is undergrads with quantitative backgrounds, mathematics, engineering, physics, who want to pursue a career on Wall Street, and they want to learn the mathematics and the finance that's similar to the things Raj and I have been talking about.
How would this be different than just an MBA, for example?
Well, an MBA is you could call it a generalized business degree. It teaches you a broad range of topics in business. What we teach is mathematics and the finance that one applies higher-level mathematics to.
It seems like one of the hottest areas of mathematics these days is chaos theory. I mean, is Wall Street in enough chaos that you could apply chaos theory and predict how things are going to happen?
Well, Raj can answer that one.
Well, I'm not really an expert, but yes, people have been trying to apply chaos theory. This has been going on for a while, but it sort of comes in and out of the attention. Mm-hmm. The idea is that a lot of the traditional or classical option pricing has been based on what they call efficient market hypothesis, which says a return of an asset essentially from one day to the next, it's more or less independent of each other. Mm-hmm. This is essentially come from the idea that prices every day sort of reflect all the information that exists, whether it's private or public, in the asset, like the stock already. And so prices would adjust, and so you cannot really predict one day's return from the previous days.
Right.
And it makes sense. But now chaos theory comes... There has been essentially observations such as the 87 crash that say that perhaps there is more to it than that. That there are certain events that take place that are outside the scope of this classical perspective. Mm-hmm. And so people have been looking at ways to adjust our models to accommodate this sort of thing. And one of the more advanced models or theories these days is coming back from physics again, and it's chaos theory. And essentially is based on, we talked about Brownian motion, the chaos theory maybe is based on something called fractional Brownian motion or fractal motions and things like that.
Mandelbrot stuff.
The Mandelbrot stuff, right, and Feigenbaum and non-linear dynamics, as they call it, as opposed to a linear dynamics.
Well, since most Wall Street analysts you hear are just baffled by this market, which is just rising and rising and rising, and people are buying junk now and all kinds of stuff. Could chaos theory explain that a little better than any of these financial analysts about why the market's going nuts like this?
Well, actually, I personally wouldn't look to chaos theory to explain that. I think more traditional areas of finance try to get a handle on that by the efficient market theorists would say to you, there's simply a risk that is not evident to us that everyone who's participating in the market is taking. So in other words, there's a small probability that you can't see that we're all going to get wiped out. Events like big crashes are an example of those risks. And of course, what Iraj referred to was the fact that in the types of theories of the market that, say, Black and Scholes used, events like the crash of 87 are almost impossible. In other words, if you measured, according to the theory, the probability of seeing a large crash like that, it would come out to be essentially zero.
But in your way of looking at it, you think that there is that finite risk that you can see.
Well, I'm not going to expound upon the market.
Let's just say that a good model would take that into account. I mean, one thing that's going on now these days is this concept of risk management that everybody's talking about. To manage the risk, you have to account for events like 87 crash. And so therefore, you need the models that sort of easily accommodate things like this. And the traditional models do have a hard time. They can, but do have a harder time.
But let me just give out the number. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. But do you as scientists come from enough of a different perspective than Wall Street types that you're not afraid to say these sort of things, not afraid to look at the possibility, add that risk, because you know from the world of science and research that these things happen?
Well, let me give you an example. I used to work in equity derivatives risk management at Morgan Stanley, and sometimes I'd be asked to look at a particular portfolio or some account or something, and I'd be asked to you know, talk about the risk of this account. And the idea was they wanted a fresh set of eyes from a different perspective to analyze the risk and assess what possible things could bring damage to the firm. And sometimes it wasn't very sophisticated. Other times it was very sophisticated. But whatever the case was, you know, we had to bring modeling to simulate possible future events in the market and then see what impact that would have on Morgan Stanley. That's the kind of things people in risk management do.
Hmm. So they brought you in and said, you have a fresh perspective. We'd like you to take a look at it.
That's right. And then usually what happened is some portfolio manager or something would be very unhappy that a fresh perspective was being brought to his account. And
Stop upsetting the boat here.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're all team players over here. We're talking about scientists on Wall Street this hour and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from National Public Radio. And let's get some practical advice for some folks on the phone. Michael in Watertown, Mass. Hi, Michael.
Hi. Actually, that sort of begs the question of maybe as scientists get more and more integrated into Wall Street, we won't have a fresh perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But I was originally calling to ask, how do I get involved in this? I got my physics doctorate a few years back, and I've been doing computer programming ever since, pretty much. And I'm interested in how one starts short of going to NYU for a couple of years. And I'm also wondering to what extent this sort of thing is being done outside of New York City. I know there's a firm in Taos that's fairly prominent, but I'm in Boston.
Well, who wants to? Raj, I know you're a physicist.
Yes.
Oxford, Harvard, can't get better than that. Wall Street.
Well, I tell you what I did. I mean, first of all, talk to people. I mean, if you have friends or maybe friends of friends who have come to Wall Street, have taken on jobs, talk to them and essentially create a network around yourself. That helps you out with a lot of things, such as interviews, deciding which business or aspect of Wall Street you want to get involved with. But beyond that, one thing I did is essentially in New York, there's a lot of headhunters, as you probably know. They're specialized headhunters for quantitative people. And what I did is essentially call a couple of them. You don't want to call too many. You send them your resume, and then they will interview with you. And that they help out. They helped me out, actually. I got my first job, which was Bankers Trust, this way. And then when I found my ways, I moved on to other jobs. But so that's definitely one way I recommend
Neil?
To do it.
The only thing I would add to that is that in recent years, because more and more physicists and mathematicians are moving to Wall Street, the standard of what people expect you to know when you come in an interview has gone up quite a bit. I'd say 5 years ago, it was quite common for someone to come in and say, I'm here, I'm a physicist, I'm a mathematician, hire me, and it was reasonable to expect to get hired. Nowadays, because so many people are learning so much finance, we really recommend that people learn some finance, not necessarily through a program, but maybe just pick up some relevant books on derivative securities and read some magazines like Risk Magazine, which have specialized articles on options pricing, so that you get familiar with the types of things people do.
Is Wall Street, though, hunting for scientists?
Absolutely.
They're a valued commodity.
Yes.
Absolutely.
More than, in other words, if you have someone who's a scientist and someone who's just out of a other business program, they're going to choose a scientist.
No. I mean, let's be clear. There are specialized jobs that are suited for scientists and that people want to hire scientists into. And those people, scientists are valued for those positions. There's a lot of other jobs where the appropriate person is an MBA or someone with an undergraduate degree.
Okay, Michael?
Okay.
Good luck.
Thanks.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. And to narrow it down to those jobs, specifically, what kinds of jobs were you talking about that they're looking to hire for?
Well, for example, risk management is a big area where quantitative methods are being applied. Derivative security valuation, quantitative
derivative
research.
Securities means what to the layperson?
Options pricing.
Yeah. And so they actually have headhunters out there looking for physicists, mathematicians?
Sure, we could plug a few if you want.
Well, maybe we'll put them up on our website later when we're done with the program. But is it because Wall Street is having such a good time now that they're looking for these people? Or has this always been like this?
Well, it's been like this for a while. I mean, I think it helps to have a good growth and, you know, be able to attract these people. But I think it's always, I would say early 80s has been an influx, a huge influx of mm-hmm. quantitative people to Wall Street. And I think once they opened up to this, once Wall Street has opened up to the possibility of attracting quantitative people, it's, it's continued. And they've demonstrated that they can do such a good job.
All right, we're going to come back and talk lots more with our scientists on Wall Street and take lots more of your questions of how to be one if you want to. So stay with us. We'll take a short break and come right back. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from National Public Radio.
Support for National Public Radio comes from this and other National Public Radio stations. Special funding for Talk of the Nation Science Friday comes from the National Science Foundation, supporting education and research in science, math, and technology. Additional support for National Public Radio comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts part of their everyday lives, and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
I'm Ray Suarez. We've come a long way in overcoming a history of discrimination, fear, and segregation of Americans with disabilities. But old attitudes don't easily die. People with disabilities are still marginalized and face economic and social barriers. We'll look at the story of the country's changing attitudes and talk to Americans with disabilities who are productive and successful in life on the next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Welcome back to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about scientists who work on Wall Street. No, it's not an oxymoron, scientists, Wall Street. There are a lot of scientists and mathematicians working on Wall Street, more of them every day, and Wall Street's looking for them. Let me introduce two of them to you. Raj Khani, who is president of the Martingale Technologies in New York, a fellow in mathematics and in the finance program at the Courant Institute of Mathematical Sciences at NYU. Also, Neil Chris, a portfolio manager and researcher at Goldman Sachs Asset Management Quantitative Research Group in New York, and director of the Mathematics and Finance Program at the Courant Institute of Mathematical Sciences at NYU. Our number, 1-800-989-8255, if you're a scientist out of work and looking for a job. Let's go to Caroline in Manhattan. Caroline in the city here.
Hello, quick remark.
Yes.
First, I appreciated the remark on chaos theory because Wall Street behavior is ostensibly supposed to be based on irrational behavior very much and not amenable to scientific inquiry, so I wonder about that. But that wasn't the main point I was making.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to say, in terms of our policy of bringing in, importing new scientists, I'm eternally confused. We seem to be so schizophrenic. On one side of our mouth, I hear people saying, well, we need a lot of scientists. We have to bring them in because we don't have enough of our own. And then I hear on your program that there really aren't enough jobs in science for all of the people who are here already. So I'm wondering about this. It sounds a little schizophrenic to me.
Excellent question. Neil, Chris, straighten that out for us, would you?
Well, the distinction is between a job in academia and a job outside of academia. Right now, there's a shortage of jobs in academia for PhD mathematicians and physicists. By that, I mean that if you have 20 people graduating from a from a PhD program, not all of them will get full-time employment in, say, mathematics or physics jobs as professors or the like. On the other hand, we're talking about jobs on Wall Street, of which there seems to be, if not an abundance, at least a lot more than the jobs for academics.
Does that explain it, Caroline? Okay, she's gone. Also, we've done, and she's probably listened to our program where we've talked about high-tech jobs. There are thousands of high-tech jobs going begging because not enough scientists are trained in those kinds of jobs, or there are not, just not enough jobs out there for them. And we talked about having facing the possibility of importing more scientists and engineers to come in and talk about it. So it's a very complicated situation here, but certainly it is one that's worth talking about a lot, and we do that. I want to talk about your master's program there at NYU. Let's say somebody wants to sign up. What do you do? What do you teach them there in that master's program?
We teach them a variety of mathematics and computational techniques, namely ways of writing computer programs that solve differential equations and optimization problems related to finance. And we also teach some practical aspects of finance. So we have people like Iraj who are variously involved in Wall Street, who are professionals. Many of them have PhDs and strong quantitative backgrounds, who come in and teach a particular aspect of life on Wall Street. So, for example, we have a risk management course and taught by the head of global derivatives at Chase. And we have a course on pricing and hedging options taught by someone from an investment bank. And I myself, being a professional on Wall Street, teach an overview of banking and finance.
Do you ever miss just talking physics, Iraj? Anybody?
Yes, of course I do. But you know, I try to keep contact mm-hmm. with the old friends mm-hmm. in school.
And what would be your single biggest piece of advice for someone who wants, let's say, to take the course at NYU and you'd be teaching them? How could they be best prepared to come into this course? So with forget everything you knew before in physics? Or
no.
What would be the best way to do that?
No, I don't think you should forget. Actually, it's maybe you should give yourself a fresh outlook that mm-hmm. you're going into a new career. You're preparing yourself for a new career. But the tools that you have learned and your training and that sort of scientific culture carry with you. It's very important that you keep that integrity with your scientific ways of looking at things. This is what Wall Street really wants.
Yeah,
they don't want you to become different from who you are. They want you as you are. So I say that open yourself up to the opportunities in the Wall Street. Learn what's there and how to contribute. But don't lose your quantitative culture.
You may have to get some new suits, though.
Yes.
1-800-989-8255. Kelly in Durham, North Carolina. Hi, Kelly.
Hi. I'm calling, and I heard Caroline speaking just a few minutes ago, and she probably was talking a lot about what I wanted to say. I graduated 3 years ago with a bachelor's degree in chemistry and moved down to the Research Triangle Park area, figuring it would be pretty easy to find a job. But there was just nothing available at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up working as a brokerage assistant at a brokerage firm that's on the Eastern Seaboard.
Come on up.
I'm actually not working anymore. I'm working at the firm anymore. I have a baby now. But yeah.
Much tougher job you have then.
I'm sorry?
You have a much tougher job.
Much tougher job.
Yeah.
But I thought it intriguing. I'd heard a show a couple years ago about how difficult it was for people with science degrees to be finding jobs in their areas, and it seemed to me that brokerage is always hiring, especially in the last decade with the big boom we've had, that perhaps that's why so many people from science backgrounds as well as many different other backgrounds end up in brokerage, because mm-hmm. that's where the jobs seem to be.
All right. Thanks for calling. Mm-hmm. Interesting comments. Very typical.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Let's go to Carrie Ann in Seattle. Hi, Carrie Ann.
Hi. I wanted to ask about, basically it seems like every field of science has gone through what we kind of would call a quantum breakthrough, obviously physics, but economics seems to be the one area that hasn't had its quantum breakthrough yet, getting out of the mold of being based off of an industrial revolution type of way of thinking. Do you think that having more scientists in Wall Street are going to kind of educate, so to speak, or make more intelligent the market? And do you think there will be a breakthrough that will come about because of the result of the communications between these two fields?
Excellent. Interesting question. Quantum mechanics has taken over everything. Will it take over economics too? Or should it? And is there a breakthrough waiting there for something on the market, maybe?
Yes, it's possible. It may already have happened in a way. But the fact that all the scientists coming to Wall Street bring in all these perspectives, and maybe something really big like that will happen, or is happening now.
Do the scientists on Wall Street get together and discuss new kinds of ideas?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. That's right. There's a lot of interaction between Wall Street and academia. There's, for example, Courant Institute has weekly financial mathematics seminars where people from Wall Street get together with people from academia to talk about finance, and business schools have the same sorts of seminars. And there's also many conferences where scientists who are now working on Wall Street get together to discuss various new results in financial mathematics.
Mm-hmm. How's that, Carrie Ann?
That sounds good.
Thank you very much for calling. 1-800-989-8255. Stuart in Minneapolis, you're next. Hi, Stuart.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine.
Well, I had a question based on remembering that a friend many years back in the early 80s, when she left MIT in math, a lot of her co-graduates wound up, some on Wall Street, but others, you know, for want of a better term, Las Vegas. So I was wondering how much there's been motion in that direction with people with computational skills winding up either on the tables or, you know, working in the front offices of the gaming industry.
Mm-hmm. I think a long time ago there was someone named Ed Thorpe who was a pro blackjack player who was apparently really excellent at that, who afterwards went into Wall Street, and I think he had a very strong quantitative background. But other than that, I don't really know.
Don't they sort of outlaw people now going to Vegas and...
That's right. If you're
counting cards and all that kind of stuff.
If you're good enough to beat the house, then you not allowed in the house.
Yeah, but they need people on the in the front office knowing how to figure out who the smarties are. So I was wondering if any
Yeah, well, that's right. You need somebody to catch somebody. You need somebody else. It takes a crook to catch a crook, so to speak. Yeah. Exactly. All right, Stuart, maybe there's a job for you there.
Not
that you're a crook, but thanks for calling. 1-800-989-8255. One of the great changes over the last decade anywhere is computers, computerization. Have computers revolutionized Wall Street and your use of computers revolutionized Wall Street?
Yes,
I think so.
How? In what simple way would you say? Just in volume, the volume of trading or...
Well, the volume of trading today wouldn't be possible without electronic transmission of orders to the exchanges, for example. Mm-hmm. But in the areas we're talking about, risk management would not be possible without large computers, because even if you can value, say, one option fairly quickly on a pocket calculator, even to value thousands of options in thousands of different future scenarios on a computer, you need a very fast computer, and only computers that have come out very recently are both affordable and fast enough to do the kinds of risk management that's demanded of large financial mm-hmm. institutions.
Mm-hmm. In fact, you're developing software, don't you write programs?
Yes, we are. And yes, we're facing similar problems. In fact, I think computers and finance are coming to a sort of interesting intersection right now, where... essentially, they are cross-feeding each other. Many of the subjects in computer science now are such as transaction modeling or distributed computing or network computing. All of these are actually their primary domain is actually Wall Street. They're being fed many challenging questions by Wall Street. So, and this is the area that my company actually emphasizes. Mm-hmm. There is a tremendous amount of computing that has to be done, tremendous amount of complex computations that have to be essentially multiple processes running on multiple machines, data residing in all kinds of sources in various computers, and people tools communicating across the network to each other.
And you have 24-hour.
And you have 24-hour
markets. Around the world, markets and...
And yes, absolutely. Yeah. And all of this has actually posed a tremendous challenge to computer science as well. And finance has taken advantage, great advantage, of mm-hmm. what's happened to computer science, the latest developments in computer science.
So a computer scientist would have a great future here in Wall Street.
I think they will.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones to Richard in Cleveland. Hi, Richard.
Hello. I came in the middle of the conversation, unfortunately, and I just wondered what the chaos theory would have added if, you know, to predict what happened in 1987. Like, what dimension would they have added? I am not a quant by any stretch of the imagination, and I'm just trying to grope and
all right. See, that's see, okay. Don't have to apologize. Neither am I. That's a good, I just like the question. Neil, you have an answer? Could chaos even could have predicted the crash in 87?
Well, predicting the crash is a difficult thing to say because nobody today really has a definite idea of why the crash happened exactly when it did and to the magnitude that it did. There's various theories out there. So I don't think that any theory would have, 2 days before the crash, predicted with certainty that chaos would have happened. On the other hand, from a risk management perspective, the question is, if you were holding securities a week or a month before the crash, how much money would have you wanted to set aside for protection against a large crash? And if you used a very simple model of the market, you would have said, for a crash the magnitude of the 87 crash, I wouldn't want to put any money away at all because it just isn't likely to happen. But with a more sophisticated theory, perhaps something stemming from chaos, you might want to put a lot more money down as capital against such a crash.
Given the dimension of the rise of the market that's taken place, have you ever calculated what the costs would have been of setting up one of these programs to protect yourself against, given the small probability, let's take it right after 87. You know, the market rallies and continues to rally up until this time, short a few months where you have declining markets. Have you ever calculated the cost of implementing one of these plans?
Well, can you answer that question?
Well,
a hedging strategy. In other words, you're saying we want to protect ourselves.
Yes.
What's the cost?
Well, it's very hard. It really depends on the portfolio. I mean, if you mean the cost for a country like...
take the S&P 500.
Well, there is a S&P 500, unfortunately, is not just... there are many, many things like a huge amount of options traded over the counter or in the exchanges based on S&P 500. And nobody exactly knows necessarily what's out there because some of these things are just between parties that, that is not really transparent to the market. So it's sort of very hard to measure things unless you give me and tell me precisely what the portfolio in question is.
Yeah, well, we're not going to get into that. We're not going to get into individual portfolio.
But, but it's definitely a costly affair. In fact, people buy put options, for example, to hedge their portfolios. And if you can come up with a put option that's appropriate for your portfolio and the price of that put is the price of that protection. But it's a complex thing to price.
Yeah, that's a risk against the market crashing. Production.
But this is a good example of what people, scientists on Wall Street do. Large companies, corporate treasuries, and pension funds sometimes want to protect against crashes, and people need to figure out the cost of that protection.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from National Public Radio. And let's go now to Pranav in New York. Hi, Pranav.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
I am a graduate student in the program that the two gentlemen are representing today, and I just wanted to make a point. I think that there's something slightly missing from the discussion, and what they're talking about specifically are jobs on Wall Street and that sort of thing. But there are a number of other things like regulatory agencies in the government that need people that are mathematically inclined. And I think that is something that you should address and that needs to be addressed.
All right. Thank you for bringing it up. What was he talking about, that there are even more jobs?
That's right. Absolutely. I think that's an excellent point. In fact, last fall, NYU hosted a celebration of the new financial mathematics program, and David Shaw, a well-known figure in Wall Street, gave a talk in favor, sort of in support of our program, and he discussed all the areas where he thought quantitative methods would have a big impact. And he talked about the public sector quite a bit. And the thing is that regulatory agencies look at the entire economy and they say, how can we prevent large banks from going bankrupt? And the reason they want to set that protection up is because if a lot of large banks go bankrupt, that can have a negative effect on the economy. And in order to make their rules that are both sensible from the business angle of the banks and also protect the banks from going bankrupt, which protects the economy, they often need to invoke fairly sophisticated quantitative methods.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to Elizabeth in Boston. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. My question is, for somebody with an undergraduate background in mathematics who does not yet have a PhD, would you recommend a PhD program, that is if they're interested in finance, or going into something like your program?
It depends very much on what specifically your goals are. My feeling is that if you're entering a PhD program with an eye towards Wall Street and you feel that you'd rather learn something on the job, then you can get a tailor-made education for Wall Street by entering a program such as NYU's or some of the other programs like at University of Chicago and kind of get a head start. You would come into Wall Street perhaps at a slightly lower level, but you'd also come into Wall Street 3 or 4 years earlier, and you would learn on the job.
I see. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for calling. 1-800-989-8255. Felix in Brooklyn. Hi, Felix.
Hi. I like to say your discussion is really fascinating, and it's interesting because I'm a student now, and I actually got accepted into NYU. I'm going to study the next year as an undergraduate. And I wrote a research paper not too long ago on chaos in non-financial markets. I'm wondering what kind of things would a person like me at this stage of the game want to study to try to get a head start on all this, and possibly, you know, in terms of work or internments, to try to really learn and see if this is really something as a future for me.
Hmm. So he's gone to NYU now.
I'm going to be going next year. I just got accepted, and I'm going to be studying there. And I have an inclination now towards computer science. And towards finance also, and economics, and I was seeing what possibly could be my future towards this.
Yeah, is he on the right track?
Excuse me?
I'm asking our guests. Is Felix on the right track here?
Well, yes, he's on the right track. I mean, I personally don't know much about chaos, but in a sense, I mean, you could, if that's the sort of a path you want to follow, which means you want to go into computers and neural networks, maybe chaos theory, fractals, things like that. I mean, there is applications. A lot of asset managers, the buy side companies, use a lot of these tools.
Should he stay in computer science or go to the finance side? I think he might be asking too.
I think that if you're looking to work on Wall Street, a broad education is a good idea. In other words, pick a major that you really like, but then take a lot of other courses. If you're in computer science, learn a lot of math, learn a lot of finance. As for summer jobs, which you alluded to, when we hire people, we look for people who have some work experience. It always helps. Having worked in an office environment with a group of people on financial problems is a great way to eventually get a job on Wall Street.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me this hour. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. Neil Chris is portfolio manager and researcher at Goldman Sachs Asset Management Quantitative Research Group here in New York and director of the Mathematics and Finance Program at the Courant Institute of Mathematical Sciences at NYU. Iraj Khani is president of Martingale Technologies in New York and a fellow in the Mathematics and Finance Program at the Courant Institute of Mathematical Science at New York University. And thanks again for joining me today.
Thank you.